Okay, let's unpack this. We're delving into a story today that really makes you think about the bonds we form, how incredibly, well, sacred they can feel, and, you know, what happens when they're just shattered in the most unimaginable ways. Our mission today is to take you on a deep dive. It's a powerful, incredibly personal account of profound betrayal, heart-wrenching loss, and then an inspiring journey towards resilience, towards redemption. Our source material isn't just recounting events. It's like an intimate reflection, a really raw look at a harrowing experience.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And what's truly fascinating here, what we really want to extract for you today, isn't just the story itself. It's the nuggets of insight, you know, into human psychology. This kind of personal experience, it really illuminates these broader aspects of our capacity for survival, how we navigate extreme adversity. And while the incredible strength and vulnerability that we all have inside us, sometimes hidden, it really is a testament to the human spirit's ability to, well, endure.
So let's rewind back to the beginning. It sounds like an almost idyllic foundation, doesn't it? The author paints this really vivid picture of the initial friendship, a 16-year bond. Imagine it blossoming, they say, like a delicate flower. Each petal, a shared experience, unwavering support. It was built on what they call a sacred foundation of trust, laughter, mutual respect, weaving through life's storms. You really get a sense of the depth of that connection.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that sheer length of time, 16 years, and the depth they describe, that's what makes the betrayal, the later unraveling, just so devastating. Psychologically speaking, when you invest that long in a relationship, one described with such trust, it becomes part of your identity, doesn't it? Part of your sense of safety. So the greater that trust, that emotional investment, the more profound the wound is when it's broken. It's not just losing a friend. It feels like part of you is being ripped away.
Yeah. And those subtle threads of betrayal they mentioned? Well, they soon became these undeniable first cracks.
Mm-hmm.
They remember noticing a real shift, their friends starting to pull back, you know, engaging in secretive conversations. And maybe the biggest red flag, a lack of support during critical moments.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing about that deep trust. Those signs weren't immediately, like, seen for what they were. They were initially dismissed, chalked up to personal struggles the friend might be having.
Mm-hmm. And that's a classic example, really, of what psychologists might call confirmation bias, or maybe cognitive dissonance. When something contradicts our deeply held belief about someone we trust implicitly, our minds often try to rationalize it, to make it fit, to maintain that sense of harmony, you know? We give them the benefit of the doubt, look for other explanations. And this narrative powerfully shows how that tendency, which comes from loyalty, right? It can inadvertently mask a much deeper, more sinister unraveling that's starting. It builds this awful suspense for the person living it.
It's just, it's hard to even wrap your head around what happened next, especially after 16 years. The author says the betrayal escalated to a point that's almost unbelievable. They became, quote, the target of an attempted murder orchestrated by someone I once called a friend. I mean, that's not just a falling out. It's described as a chilling betrayal that pierced the very heart of their bond, shattering their security, their trust, plunging them into darkness and despair.
Mm-hmm.
How does the mind even start to process that?
Mm-hmm.
Betrayal on that scale from someone that close?
That's the critical question, isn't it? Psychologically, this isn't just grief. It's not just losing a friendship. It's a catastrophic rupture, a rupture of their whole attachment system, their understanding of safety. The initial shock would be immense. It challenges your very perception of reality, of who is safe. This isn't just some external danger. It's a violation coming from within your trusted circle. The brain's threat response would just be firing constantly. Hypervigilance, profound disbelief. You're not just mourning the friendship. You're mourning the collapse of your internal world security. It shakes everything.
And in the aftermath, this terrifying aftermath, the author talks about encountering what they call the dark side of human nature. They discover their friend had apparently delved into witchcraft, reportedly using dark practices to manipulate and control. And the impact was deeply personal. These mind games played on my psyche, described as relentless, leaving them questioning my reality, feeling trapped in a web of deceit.
Right. And this witchcraft element, it adds this really fascinating and frankly terrifying layer. Even if you don't literally believe in it, psychologically, it taps into some primal fears, doesn't it? It creates this sense of being targeted by forces you can't understand or reason with. It erodes your rational coping. It's a kind of psychological manipulation that uses those spiritual or superstitious fears, makes it incredibly hard to just brush off. It deepens the sense of powerlessness way beyond a normal betrayal. It feels like an attack on your soul, blurring the lines between friend and foe in the most insidious way possible.
Wow. As if that wasn't enough. The psychological warfare, the direct threat, the author then experiences something truly insidious, what they call gang stalking. Could you maybe help us understand what that is sold in their account and why it would just deepen that sense of isolation?
Yeah, this raises a really profoundly unsettling question about the nature of the threat itself. So the author describes gang stalking as involving a network of individuals within my community, people participating in a campaign of harassment, intimidation. The critical part here is the perceived spread of the threat. It's not just one person anymore, it's a collective. And the secrecy surrounding their actions, that's what really ramps up the horror. Psychologically, this kind of sustained, covert, multi-person harassment, it creates extreme paranoia. It completely erodes any sense of safety, even in your own community, your own environment. It isolates you totally because who can you trust? You feel like you can't trust anyone. Makes it almost impossible to get help, to find refuge. It's like the whole social fabric around you just shatters.
And amidst all of this, this external threat, the internal turmoil, a different kind of loss happened. But equally devastating, the passing of my six beloved dogs. Mm-hmm. And the author really emphasizes these weren't just pets, they were family. Companions providing unconditional love, support, especially during those darkest moments. Their absence after all the human betrayal, it just left this profound void. Aching, they say, for the warmth of their unconditional love in a world grown hostile.
Oh, absolutely. Losing beloved pets is always deeply painful grief. Always. But in this specific context, where human trust has been just completely obliterated, those animals, they would have been a crucial anchor. Irreplaceable. They represented maybe the last source of truly unconditional love, a safe, non-judgmental connection. Their presence likely offered vital comfort, helped regulate emotions, provided some grounding when human connections were treacherous. So losing them isn't just grief, it's what we might call compounded grief. It multiplies the suffering exponentially, right when they were most vulnerable, most needing that pure connection. It's like losing the only truly safe space left in a hostile world.
It seems almost impossible to come back from that level of despair. But the narrative shifts. It shifts towards this powerful pursuit of justice. The author describes starting this harrowing journey of accountability. A quest, they say, fraught with challenges, but one that ultimately became a catalyst for my healing. They talk about learning the power of self-advocacy, discovering this resilience that bloomed from the ashes of betrayal. Standing alone against it all. It sounds incredibly empowering, actually.
It truly is. Think about it in a situation where you felt completely powerless, where your control over your life, your safety, your reality was just stripped away. The act of seeking justice, however hard, is this profound way of reclaiming your agency, your power. Psychologically, engaging in that self-advocacy, it shifts you from being a passive victim to an active survivor. That process, fighting back, even with all the difficulties, it's a powerful form of active coping. It helps rebuild that sense of competence, of control, and that's absolutely vital for healing from trauma. Mm-hmm. It really is transforming those ashes of betrayal into a foundation for personal strength.
And as part of this path, this healing path, the author describes finding solace in faith. They turn towards faith in Jesus, finding strength through prayer and reflection. This faith became, in their words, an unshakable anchor, guiding them through the storm, a guiding light, they say, illuminating the path toward healing and forgiveness.
Yes, absolutely. And in the face of such overwhelming trauma, when external safety nets just collapse, faith often serves as this incredibly powerful internal sanctuary. It provides a framework for meaning, helps people find purpose or understanding in suffering that seems senseless. From a resilience perspective, spiritual practices like prayer, reflection, they can offer a deep sense of internal security, calm. They can even help regulate the nervous system, foster hope when maybe all other sources of comfort seem gone. It's about tapping into an inner resource, something that transcends the immediate chaos.
So this brings us to forgiveness. What does this all mean when you're facing such, well, profound betrayal? How do you even begin to forgive something like attempted murder by a friend? The author really delves into this, describing forgiveness as a profound act of self-liberation. They learned that holding on to anger, onto resentment, only perpetuated their own suffering. So by choosing to forgive those who betrayed them, they were able to reclaim their power, start healing those wounds. But is it always healthy to forgive? Especially cases this extreme. What are the nuances here?
That's a really crucial distinction, and the source seems to highlight it well. Psychologically, forgiveness in this kind of context, it isn't necessarily about excusing what happened or reconciling with the person. It's often not about that at all. It's primarily an internal process. For the self, see, holding on to that intense anger, that resentment, it creates this huge cognitive and emotional burden. It basically keeps you tethered emotionally to the trauma, to the perpetrator. So by choosing to forgive, internally, the individual breaks that chain, releases themselves from the past's grip. It's really an act of self-care, a conscious decision to free up all that mental and emotional energy, energy that was consumed by bitterness, so you can redirect it towards your own healing, your future. Rather than staying bound to what happened, it's about finding internal peace, not necessarily granting external pardon.
That makes a lot of sense. And as the healing progressed, the author talks about embracing new friendships, ones that emerged like beacons of light in the darkness. These new connections were built on trust, respect, shared values, a totally different foundation. They provided vital support and, crucially, reminded the author that not all relationships are destined for betrayal, showing that trust could bloom again.
Mm-hmm. And that takes immense courage, truly immense, especially after such a devastating breach. When your fundamental belief and connection has been shattered, the instinct is often to withdraw, to protect yourself, wall yourself off. But forming new, healthy attachments is absolutely essential for rebuilding that sense of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Belonging. Neurobiologically, positive social interactions actually help regulate the nervous system. They reduce that chronic stress response trauma causes. So these new relationships, they serve as this powerful corrective experience. They prove that trust can bloom again like those fragile blossoms in the wake of a storm. They offer proof that genuine, healthy connection is still possible. It's a really brave step towards reclaiming a full life.
This whole journey of transformation,
yeah,
it really is a testament to the human spirit's capacity for resilience, isn't it? The author concludes by saying they now carry the scars of betrayal, but as reminders, not of suffering, but of their capacity for growth, resilience, and the enduring power of faith and hope. They see the whole experience now as a kind of tapestry of betrayal and blessings.
Exactly. What this deep dive ultimately reveals is just the profound, almost unimaginable strength of the human spirit. It's a narrative that goes way beyond just survival. It's about deep resilience that really thrives even in the face of horrific adversity. It's a testament to the power of faith, how it can illuminate the darkest paths. And that enduring hope, the hope that whispers of a future that isn't burdened by the shadows of the past. It's a powerful message, not just about enduring, but about ultimately finding profound growth and eventually peace.
This story really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What inner resources do you have, maybe buried deep down, that you might not even be aware of? Resources just waiting to be called upon when you're faced with life's most unexpected, most challenging moments. Thank you for joining us on The Deep Dive.